there's something undefinable that beckons travelers back to the greater Fort Myers area in southwest Florida year after year. It feels like bare feet on soft white sand beaches that give way to gently lapping waves. It looks like the breathtaking abundance of wildlife, colorful birds, dolphins, manatees, and more, dwelling in lush mangrove ecosystems and translucent Gulf waters. It tastes like fresh coastal cuisine served at sunset at a waterfront restaurant. What will draw you back to Fort Myers? Go to visitfortmyers.com for more inspiration.
I'm Jenna Wortham.
I'm Wesley Morris. We're two culture writers at the New York Times.
This is Still Processing.
Where's Jason?
Jason?
Where were you?
I didn't know if you were lost. Stick with me and I'll keep you safe.
Now that I have pried you off my arms, let's talk about Jordan Peele's Us.
I mean, look, yes, I know I was intense, but despite my body language, I had a great time during the movie. I love being scared to my bones like that in the marrow. So thank you for tolerating me. But yeah, let's talk about the film. So it's about a family vacation, two parents, two kids, the perfect nuclear family.
And they're like a bougie black family. They have money and a summer home, and they have these, like, at least one Alvin Ailey poster in their house and a nice car and this boat that their dad is just so happy they have. And they have this glowing, glistening skin. But anyway, yes, it's about this family vacation.
And that brings up something very unpleasant in the mother. As a girl, she was on a very similar family vacation, and she wandered away from her folks into a fun house on the beach, where she saw something that she has not forgotten. And what she saw has not forgotten her either. And now she's back, the same beach, with a daughter of her own. She's a little bit nervous. She thinks something is coming for her.
Some things.
And sure enough, one night, something does.
There's a family in our driveway.
It's probably the neighbors.
And they look out the window, and standing in the driveway are four people holding hands.
Zora, put your shoes on.
If you want to get crazy, we can get crazy.
And they appear to be played by the same actors that you're watching play this family on vacation.
And the central question of the film is, who are these people, why are they doing this, and where did they come from? Now, y'all know I love a good spoiler, but we promise that we won't spoil it for you.
But that question that you're asking about where this family came from and why they're doing what they're doing, that's as scary as anything in the movie. You want to know what really happened in this woman's past that's unleashed this horror in the present.
Yes.
There's this really fascinating moment where the one family is on one side of the living room.
Right.
And the other family is on the other side of the living room.
Yeah.
And the father, Gabe, who's played by Winston Duke, is like,
what are you people?
There's clearly a sense of threat.
It's us.
They look exactly like us. They think like us. They know where we are. We need to move and keep moving. They won't stop until they kill us. Or we kill them.
There's something about the dual nature of the families and the way that one family is dressed in normal, regular street clothing, just regular everyday wear, and the other family's in this strange uniform of these red jumpsuits
right. That
almost look like prison uniforms. Mm-hmm. So they've escaped from somewhere.
Right.
But you know that they're bringing with them some sort of baggage.
And they've got these scissors. They're an actual weapon of violence. And they're also a symbol of this attempt to disconnect from this civilized family.
Yeah.
And the thing that it makes me think, both actually and symbolically, is how free were these bougie black people? Because in the movies, you know, unless you're in a Tyler Perry movie, like if you're driving what they're driving, got a boat the way they got and a house the way they got, and, you know, walking around in a Howard sweatshirt.
You're oblivious.
Yeah.
You've made it.
You've got your 2.5 kids, et cetera,
right,
et cetera.
Right.
Life is looking good.
So the idea that Jordan is building to in this dynamic is how free were they? And then really how free are any of us?
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, you know, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with the first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Watching Us, Jordan Peele's second movie after Get Out, I was reminded of a lot of things. I mean,
non mi crederesti. Tutto sembra così fantastico e così assurdo. Non mi resta altro da fare che fuggire.
Things like Dario Argento's Suspiria.
One of my favorite, most formative films.
He doesn't talk much, does he? His tongue's cut out.
And Wes Craven's The People Under the Stairs.
Well, Mommy caught him trying to call for help one day, and Daddy had to teach him speak no evil, right?
Totally thought about the movie It Follows.
Don't open the door!
See? Everything's okay.
And this British-Nigerian author, Helen Oyeyemi, who had this amazing book, White is for Witching, about a set of twins living in a haunted house. Mm. Just as an aside, though, I have to say, as someone who loves the genre of horror a lot, it was so unbelievably delightful to see a horror film share DNA with so many other classic genre films, but really just populated by Black people. It's like something you never see. It was really fun.
I agree. It was satisfying to see Black people in this movie. And Jordan Peele is definitely paying homage to other horror films. But I feel like this movie is connected to something else, too.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I kept coming back to over and over in terms of how a woman is both haunted by and hunted by past trauma is Toni Morrison's Beloved.
Beloved is a book about a runaway slave named Setha, who now lives in Cincinnati, Ohio. The book takes place in 1873, which is 18 years after she escaped a plantation that they called Sweet Home, which was located in Kentucky. And it's been 10 years since the Emancipation Proclamation was read, which, in theory, ended slavery.
Right.
It's a portrait of a woman trying to make sense of her life and herself post-enslavement.
Mm-hmm. You know, the book came out in 87. It was turned into a movie with Oprah Winfrey and Kimberly Elise and Danny Glover and Thandi Newton, who played Beloved. And I personally think this movie is just people turn their back on it because it wasn't the book. And I think the movie is actually quite good.
I remember people hating it, but I watched it recently and I thought it was great. I
yeah.
loved it.
I mean, I just feel like people weren't ready to deal with this question of how you literalize I mean, to the extent that the movie is literal in any way, but it, you know, you are giving physical form to like to ideas and the poetry of Toni Morrison's writing.
Right. Which and, is near impossible.
And Jonathan Demme is the person who did it. And so there was a little bit of upset about that.
Yes.
Well, you had this white director telling this black woman's story.
For sure.
But Oprah Winfrey was in it. She produced it.
Why you leave me?
Beloved, I was never gonna leave you. Never. There wasn't no way I was gonna let school teacher come haul all of us off and measure your behind before we tore it up.
You leave me?
No, baby, no.
So Seth family. And her family are being haunted by a really angry poltergeist that shakes the furniture and frightens everybody away. Except her daughter, Denver, who's just kind of suffering from PTSD and is just sort of there with her mom. And one day, a man named Paul D arrives and romances and wines and dines Oprah. I know it's Setha, but it'll always be Oprah in my mind. And moves in, and Paul D and Setha know each other from their time, you know, being enslaved
plantation.
On this plantation. Yeah. And so not long after they kind of reunite, a mysterious woman calling herself Beloved arrives. And Beloved is not human, but also not human. But as the story unfolds, it becomes clear that this woman is the physical manifestation and embodiment of a baby that Setha decided to murder rather than turn over to slave catchers. And Setha has been living with that choice for her whole life, both on a psychological level and now on a physical level. And so Beloved is about this grief that haunts you in a metaphysical, you know, intangible way, and then in a way that walks and talks and wants sweets, as Beloved often does.
And wants everything too, right?
No, but that all, wanting, my goodness.
So I'm watching Us and I'm thinking about this book, parenthetically, and this movie. And it's not really about slavery, Us, right? Like, it's not in any obvious way about any of those things. But it is about the way the bills of the past are overdue.
And what happens when the bill collectors come to get that check.
Yes. Yeah. And like the trauma that you carry around all this time that you don't recognize as trauma until something awakens it. And we as audience members don't know what we're watching. And we don't understand that it's trauma until Jordan Peele makes it clear that it's nothing but.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's interesting about both these works in tandem is the idea that trauma is a contagion, right?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And it isn't just this one person inhabiting her own personal PTSD. Once the Wild family shows up in Us, this thing spills over and contaminates everyone else.
The family is immediately traumatized by just what it even feels like to look into a mirror, essentially, and to be confronted with these doppelgangers that appear to want to kill them.
Right. There are also these other great similarities between Jordan Peele's movie and Toni Morrison's book.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those things is just where the movie and the book are set, at least in part, right?
Yeah.
Come on. Do not fear. Come inside. The largest lady brown devil brought to you today. Sweet, gentle devil. Eating a chicken from each hand.
So, do you remember where Paul D takes Setha and Denver when he wants to sort of announce himself as being the new man of the house?
Mm.
He's scared of this ghost that's been haunting the house away.
Right.
And he's feeling himself. And he's like, I got this family and I'm going to take them out. And we're going to celebrate a beautiful and have a beautiful day.
Yes. He takes them to a fair.
Yes. And and the opening sequence in Us involves the exact same configuration of people also going to a carnival.
Yeah.
There's a mother, a father, and a daughter. And something happens in Jordan Peele's movie at this carnival. And when these three in Beloved go to this carnival, and Toni Morrison writes about how their shadows are basically holding hands.
Mm.
It's a beautiful passage. I mean, for a rock, you're only going to hit beautiful passages in this book. And the shadows are this family unit. And they come home from the carnival. And then there's this description of Beloved basically rising out of the water and waiting for them to show up.
And then the mirror to that scene in Jordan Peele's Us comes very early in the film when we see young Adelaide wandering around the Santa Cruz boardwalk in the late 80s, which is essentially a type of a carnival. There are rides, there's freaks, there's all kinds of people hanging out. And that's the moment that this very traumatic event happens for her. She gets lost in a funhouse that says, by the way, over the top, find yourself.
Right. Yes. Yes. Yes.
So there's a similarity happening.
And I think the other interesting thing that these two things have in common is just the characters of these returned people, right? Uh-huh. On the one hand, you have the upside-down Adelaide, prison uniform, shears-carrying
yes.
Adelaide,
yes.
who is the queen of this family.
Nicknamed Red.
And Beloved, in the book, is this figure who is basically very baby-like, but also very alien.
She's definitely like a claymation figure from a Jan Svinkmeyer film. She doesn't make any sense.
Oh, look at you with the Jan Svinkmeyer.
I took a lot of psychedelics in my day.
So in the film, I mean, it's probably useful to get a sense of what these two characters have in common by just thinking about them in terms of what Thandi Newton is doing in Beloved and what Lupita Nyong'o is doing in Us and the way both of them speak. When Lupita Nyong'o does it,
be careful.
She sounds like she's gasping for air, like she had been struggling to survive a strangling or a suffocation.
Yeah.
And when Thandi Newton does it in Beloved,
why you don't let me eat the pie no more?
It's froggy.
It's definitely, it's froggy, but it's also, it's very infantile. It's mm-hmm. very much the voice of someone who's just learning how to imitate those around her.
But it also sounds like a monster. Do you know what I mean? It's not a cute little, you know, gaga goo goo voice. Mm-hmm. It's like, it sounds possessed.
Yeah, they both sound possessed,
yes,
actually.
Yes. I mean, in Beloved, this is a woman who has killed her child so that the child wouldn't have to live on a plantation.
And that's not exactly what's happening in Us, but it is something in that neighborhood.
There's also something interesting about the way the ghosts use language in this movie, too. Because they're not these articulate people who are able to sort of, like, announce what they want or declare what they want, especially Beloved.
Yeah.
And in Us, Red is basically, she has a sense of why she's there, but it's still never entirely clear from the outset.
Mm-hmm.
She just recognizes the similarities between what Adelaide has and what she has and is like, you have the nice version of what I have.
Right.
I have this broke, crazy, ugly, demonic.
Yeah.
I have these beasts.
Yeah.
And look at this beauty that you have.
Right.
And
right.
she immediately sets out to try to destroy it.
And there's that great scene where Gabe, who is Adelaide's husband, is just like, who are you people? Right. And it's this great moment of the film because in the audience, you think you're going to get a real answer, like right, something that right. actually helps you understand what's going on. And then the answer comes, we're Americans. And you don't know whether to laugh or cry in that
right,
moment.
Right, right,
you know?
That is, oh man, it's such a great moment. Because on the one hand, I mean, think about the number of levels a moment like that is operating on, right?
Exactly.
You are watching
from the penthouse to the basement.
Yes,
there
exactly.
is something happening at every level. I mean, I don't know if this happens to you. People ask me all the time,
where are you from?
Yeah. Who are you? What are you? I love the, what are you? Human. Like the only answer is I'm an American or I'm human. So there's that sort of very fundamental cheekiness. Also the way in which these figures have been conditioned to think about themselves. And then also kind of the reality. They're of America. They live in America. So it's kind of the truth. And then you find out how true that is.
Right. It's funny because you and I are the descendants of slaves.
Mm.
And I think that an interesting thing that happens as such people is that you are simultaneously extremely aware of yourself as being, like, obviously American.
Yeah.
But in rereading this book with this movie in mind, it really brought this home to me. The idea that you also get conditioned in the way that the founding fathers were conditioned not to think of enslaved Africans as Americans.
Right. Not legally considered human.
Yes.
So Us and Beloved are both pointing out the ways in which we don't think of the Black experience as the American experience or an American experience.
Mm, right.
Tumi has a soft side. Discover their new Azra bag collection and its pillowy pleats, satin finish, and crescent shape. Azra is the bag to carry for your 9-to-5 and your 5-to-9 plans that follow. Versatility, after all, is Tumi's signature. Shop the full Azra collection on Tumi.com or at a Tumi store near you.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, you know, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with a first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Is there no way that if you took race out of us, it's still the same movie? Because to me, it feels different from Get Out, which was Jordan Peele's previous movie.
Uh-huh.
Where I feel if you took race out of that movie, you kind of don't have a movie.
Well, there is a movie. It's just called Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
All right, that's fair. But in Us, if you take race out, you kind of still have a movie.
It's called The Strangers, and it's terrifying.
Oh, so you're basically, your job today is to just refute everything I say
no.
by saying, you're just wrong, here's how it will work.
No, it's not that. I'm just trying to underscore the way in which this movie is self-aware of its Blackness in the same way that Get Out was aware of its Blackness. It's not that the themes of these films don't already exist in other films. It's just different when you add in the element of self-aware Black people.
Right. So in Us, Lupita Nyong'o and Winston Duke, Gabe and Adelaide, have these white friends who are played by Elizabeth Moss and Tim Heidecker.
Love Tim and Eric's show. Go on.
And there's a version of Us, probably made by a different director.
Yes.
In which the stars of the movie are Elizabeth Moss and Tim Heidecker. And the best friends
right.
and neighbors are played by Lupita Nyong'o and Winston Duke.
Right, right.
That movie's been made not infrequently. And the thing that happens in this movie to these characters happens primarily to the white characters.
Right.
So doesn't it matter that the movie isn't about Elizabeth Moss and Tim Heidecker? Like,
yeah.
What changes if everything in this movie is exactly the same, except maybe the Alvin Ailey stuff in Lupita and Winston Duke's house?
Yeah.
What if everything else is the same, except it's just starring Elizabeth Moss and Tim Heidecker?
Well, that it's not just starring white people adds another element to the horror show of the movie, right? Because if you're at all aware of the history of Black people in this country, you already know it's a horror story.
Mm.
It's its own horror film that's been functioning for 400 years. But, you know, the addition of Black people in a film who are aware of their Blackness, you know, Gabe's character has a Howard sweatshirt on at one point, so he went to an HBCU, a historically Black college university. You know, he's imbued with a sense of himself and where he came from. And then on top of that, you know, there's this great scene once the other family is standing in the driveway, creeping everybody the F out, and Lupita's just on the phone call 911.
Mm-hmm.
And Gabe looks at her with this, like, bewilderment, and he's like, babe, really? And, you know, there's two things happening in that scene. On one hand, you're potentially about to be attacked. Of course, it makes sense to call the police. That's what any sane person would do. On the other hand, if you're a Black person in this country, you know what happens to Black folks when first responders show up. They often attack the Black people and they don't help them. So the fact that Gabe's aware of this and it's a subtlety in the film, even though Lupita's doing the right thing, it's still layered by this historical knowledge and this historical context that when the police show up, they'll probably kill that family. And that's like something they have to live with.
They are in Santa Cruz,
which is a very white town. So if you have Elizabeth Moss and Tim Heidecker as the central characters in the film, you don't get any of that nuance. It's just a regular home invasion story. It's right. not a story that carries something like trauma and grief and all these things central to its heart in the same weighted way.
Right.
The thing that keeps us racialized is the central idea of a Black woman who cannot escape herself, literally. So the film is interrogating the ways that we're still in bondage, even if outwardly we seem free. But I'm curious, Wesley, like, do you think I am overthinking it? Or is there a possibility that Jordan's just rounding out a genre that for years has just only been about white people?
I don't know. It's funny because Beloved's not a slave story. We've established that. It's not a tract or a treaty or some sort of abolitionist argument. It's something much rarer, right? It's a psychological case study that you never see. In the same way that that book is working to deepen and humanize a genre, I think Us and this question of the way race is functioning in that movie is working to complicate what a horror movie is like when you acknowledge that race in this country is real.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to be about race.
Right.
But it
right.
does matter that if you're going to have Black protagonists, there are certain realities that apply to Black protagonists that don't apply to white protagonists. And so, in addition to everything else, I think that Us is not about quote-unquote race. But it knows that you know how Black people function in horror movies. It's weird. It's like it's aware of the innovation in modern horror movies that gives these characters a kind of meta-ness. The Nightmare on Elm Street series delved into this. Scream totally mm-hmm. embraced it. Wes mm-hmm. Craven's Scream became self-aware, too. And the question with these movies in general is, like, how self-aware do you want to make the characters about what's happening to and around them?
Yes.
But in Us, the father, for instance, Gabe, acts like a Black person who knows how Black people say they would act in a horror movie. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I would never do that.
Right.
Black people wouldn't do that. You sit in the audience and you're like Regina Hall in Scary Movie, basically saying, mm-hmm. well, this is not how it works.
This is not how it
this
goes down.
This is not how we do.
That's right.
And, you know, he's cocky and he's funny and he doesn't know he's in a horror movie, but he knows that this is so impossible.
Yeah.
This situation that they're finding themselves in, that he could only react with kind of a fake bravado. Like, he makes himself blacker and he makes himself harder and tougher, yeah. but he's still kind of corny at the same time.
Exactly. Whereas Gabe's first response is to grab a baseball bat. Adelaide's first response is put on your shoes.
Yeah.
Like, we about to run.
Yeah.
And it's great.
And, you know, he offers to get money from the ATM for the home invaders. Like, that's what they came
for. They don't even know what money is. They're just like, we could be less interested in money.
But it reminds me of the way Paul D functions in Beloved, right? Mm. The women in that movie know, they have a sense that something strange and otherworldly is happening with this person who's just come to our house. They don't know why she's there, but they know it is not an earthly logical reason.
Yeah.
Right? And Paul D's like, it's Reconstruction. Slavery's ended. This person has been freed and is lost and has no people and has nowhere to go, like so many other Black people after slavery.
During that time, yeah.
I feel like one of the things that connects this book to this movie in some way that's worth trying to think about a little bit is this idea of love.
Mm-hmm.
And in Us, it's about the disconnection of, like, not having love in some way. And not being loved. Like, the first thing I thought when I saw that family in the driveway and then they come into the house and they're arrayed in the living room is, oh my God, nobody loved these people.
Aww.
These people are unloved.
Yeah. Red kind of confirms that. The mirror image of Adelaide sort of describes her children as monsters and beasts. It's really gut-wrenching.
So there's this passage in the book where Setha is telling Paul D what happened, and she's trying to bring language to this day that she tried to kill her babies.
Mm.
She was spinning round and round the room, past the jelly cupboard, past the window, past the front door, another window, the sideboard, the keeping room door, the dry sink, the stove, back to the jelly cupboard. Paul D sat at the table watching her drift into view, then disappear behind his back, turning like a slow but steady wheel.
And she is walking around in circles. She's circling the house, and she's trying to, like, you just have this image of her just pulling whatever thing comes out of her brain through her mouth.
Yeah.
And Toni Morrison has this concept in the book of re-memory.
Yes.
And
yes.
There's a kind of circular, inaccurate, but personally true idea of a thing that actually happened. And it happened according to you, and so therefore it's a kind of real thing. Mm-hmm. And I always imagine a concept like re-memory as being a circling.
Yeah.
And the way stories tend to operate in these circles.
Setha paused in her circle again and looked out the window. She remembered when the yard had a fence with a gate that somebody was always latching and unlatching.
Anyway, she's spinning around the kitchen, and Paul D is like, I don't know who this person is. She's not the person I knew. And so Paul D is saying, this here's Setha.
Talked about love like any other woman. Talked about baby clothes like any other woman. But what she meant could cleave the bone. This here, Setha. Talked about safety with a handsaw. This here new Setha didn't know where the world stopped and she began. Suddenly, he saw what Stamp Paid wanted him to see. More important than what Setha had done was what she claimed. It scared him. Your love is too thick, he said, thinking, that bitch is looking at me. She's right over my head, looking down through the floor at me. Too thick, she said, thinking of the clearing where baby Suggs' commands knock the pods off horse chestnuts. Love is, or it ain't. Thin love ain't love at all.
Mm. Ultimately, the similarities in all three mothers,
Adelaide and Red in Us and Setha in Beloved,
are women trying to figure out how to do the best for their children.
Mm.
You know, I think movies like Us and books like Beloved are validating the times things feel off and we can't explain it. And they're building a vocabulary and giving us architecture for language in the same way that A Sunken Place of Get Out perfectly encapsulates a type of scenario you find yourself in or a type of Black person, right, that you can't quite explain.
Right.
Something's a little funky and you don't know why, and then you realize, oh, they're in the sunken place.
It'll be interesting to see what America decides is going to be the sunken place of this film.
What's the metaphor?
What trope they're going to pick up on as being explicable of a lot of different things happening right now. But I also think that he really does like this idea of a double consciousness, right?
Yeah.
Double consciousness, of course, being W.E.B. Du Bois's invaluable concept that for every Black American, there are two selves.
Mm-hmm.
There is your Black self, and then there's your American
mm-hmm.
self. And you live 100% of the time aware of both these things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not just Black people who are doubly conscious.
Right, right.
But the term originated from Black scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really fascinating the way that concept might work in something like Us, with these two Black families representing two very different versions of America. I mean, both families have to be doubly conscious of the alternative path their lives could have taken. And double consciousness operates in Beloved, too. In a way, Setha knows her encounters with Beloved in the present are, I mean, they're informed by a difficult choice she's had to make in the past. And Setha has to hold both of those stories in her at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jenna, earlier you said Us made you ask this question of how free are any of us?
Yeah.
But in thinking about Jordan Peele's Us in relation to Toni Morrison's Beloved, I mean, the real question is actually, how free can we really be when all of us aren't free?
Still Processing is a product of The New York Times.
It's produced by Nina Patak.
Our editors are Sasha Weiss and Larissa Anderson.
We get editorial oversight from Lisa Tobin and Samantha Hennig.
Our engineer is Jake Gorski.
Our theme music is by Kindness. It's called World Restart from the album Otherness.
One last thing. Still Processing is going on a little hiatus. So enjoy your spring, and we'll be back in your ears real soon.
Real soon!